This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
BOA in Black Oak, Arkansas, of course, is that. And that is Jim Dandy, one of the most iconic songs of the 70s. And in studio with us today, from Black Oak, Arkansas, Jim Dandy.
Thanks, John.
And also our good friend, my local legend, Rotten Rod, Denny Carlock. How you doing, Rod?
Pretty good, John.
I'm going to call you. I'm on a back and forth.
About 20 years now.
Is that you guys have been together, and that was the first question.
We've known each other quite a while.
I wanted to ask, how did that come about?
Rock and roll.
First concert I ever saw was 1973, the Ronch and Roll Tour up in Springfield, and that was Black Oak and King Crimson. And my big brother Kenny took me to that concert.
You turned out okay. I mean, you're a little bit weird, though.
I found out through Black Oak, through my brother, who was on his way to Vietnam, and sent me a letter, and he said, I'm in Washington getting ready to go over, and just saw Iron Butterfly, and this band, Black Oak, Arkansas, opened up and really, really stole the show. Find me their album.
My goodness. One of the things that I found out over the last couple of days, of course, I guess the three of us, you're the youngest of the three of us, Rod, but over the years of being a rock and roll fan, I remember when you first started, mm-hmm. And I remember when it was Jim Dandy to the rescue. I remember when you were out playing and you had, of course, you had Ruby and Ricky Lee originally with you. You had such energy, and I always loved that.
Well, we were very energetic because we were, it's the enthusiasm. We had a lot of enthusiasm. Our enthusiasm got us by in the early years because we really didn't know what we were doing, and we didn't know how to arrange songs properly for the airspace because we all kind of went out the gate at the same time, it races on, goes through the doorway like the Three Stooges all trying to go through at the same time. That's where our arrangements were, but our enthusiasm got us by, and a lot of people came to get a dose of that enthusiasm, and Ricky Lee, he's been with me since the ninth grade, and I'm sure he's sick of me by now, but we kind of miss each other when we're not around. He's also got a book out now. He wrote a book. It's a novel, and it's fiction, and it's really doing good. It's called Evil Thingies. And
really?
It'll be in the merchandising, too, when we get here in October, and we're looking forward to that. And me and him, well, we're both 68 years old, so, But we think about the Stones a lot, and I love the Rolling Stones. I mean, look at them. They're doing an 80 by 80 foot stage, not 40 by 40. And, they're in their 70s, and they can't do nothing but respect that because they've been together so long. They got to know what they're doing. And I went to see them in Indianapolis on 4th of July, last 4th of July, last year. But the first time I ever got to see them, and they were great. They were having a good time. Finally again, and I got to really see. It was that night when Keith fell and cracked one of his ribs on the stage because he's running back down the ramp. And I was on his side of the stage too, in the VIP section. We was all on our feet though, but it was really, really experience. A bunch of old men out there kicking ass.
here's the great thing. When you guys, you started out, you went to California a few times. You got hooked up with Stax, you did the album. Then what really, I guess, really made things happen was your situation with ATCO. What did Ahmet Erdogan mean to you guys?
What did he mean to us? Well, he was the chairman, but then the chairman of the board of Warner Bros. Electra and Atlantic, WEA conglomerate. And it had only been about a handful of acts he'd ever personally signed himself, and we were the last one. And that's quite an honor, I would think. And it's hard for me to know. I came over town less than 300 people to this day. It's never had more than 300 people in it, and a couple of churches, and that's it. But, when you come from the unknown or from somewhere that's nowhere, the unknown is not as scary as it is to other people. You're not afraid of losing your day job, Like out here, the only thing anybody talks about is corn and but back there is beans and cotton, But they're getting having a lot of corn now too. Look at that corn! Look at that cotton, Johnny Cash.
So when you guys were signed by Atlantic, then all of a sudden came a run of several terrific, terrific albums. I think you guys did 10.
Well, we fell off
I'm
the
not
shelf
mistaken.
More or less, John. We weren't from anybody's stable or catalog as far as management companies goes. We we had a good review come on on Rolling Stone back when it was a paper.
Mm-hmm.
And it was by accident. This guy gave the review he did, and it had a good review happen in the Playboy magazine. And also, Bill Clinton said something about, you know, if he was anything but being president, what would he like to be? Of course, he said, because, I mean, we know each other. We're friends. And we're about the same age, believe it or not. And it's funny, he would come up there to the lodge and see me, but Hillary never did. She never did like me. She didn't want to give me a chance. Oh, God.
How did...
Now she's going to be president, maybe. Well, I guess that's better than Trump. I don't know. He's a Trump man over here. I don't think he's really a Trump card. You know, he's new money. That's like Kennedy was. The old money is like 12 generations. The new money is like two.
Okay? I understand.
And they think they're going to be able to do stuff. But you're still, you know, in a way they got it set up nowadays, they deny change because change is the law of the universe. They still don't want it to have change because it works for them the way it is. And that's the people in control. The old money, I don't even believe in voting. And I'll tell you why. Because it works for them the way it is. They're going to own both sides. They got more money than Carter does liver pills. I mean, it ain't about the money, okay? It's getting their way. You let you vote. You go out and vote because you feel like you're involved, like you're a participant. And they own both sides. It don't matter who wins. We're just being appeased. We're the Burker Bees being appeased. And, they told me if I didn't quit, I'll never be big again. And as far as they're concerned, you know, that kind of big. If I don't quit talking about things like this, if I just say a song and dance, man, it'd be better. But they can't keep me from having more fun than they do. I don't care what they do.
That's for sure. I got to ask you this question. Coming out of the Delta part of Arkansas, I've been to Arkansas a few times. I've been to Paragould. That's barely into Arkansas.
That's Greene County. Greene County, though. That's where I went when I had to leave the house.
Or
cut my hair. You know what I mean? I went there because Greene County was a wet county, and Craighead County wasn't, so I didn't go to Jonesboro. I went to Paragould.
Okay.
And quite an adventure there, too.
How did, like you guys in Arkansas, like Elvis coming out of Tupelo, how did you guys meet in Memphis? Because I think that's a pretty fascinating story.
Elvis called me the first time we ever, George Klein, a mutual friend, a disc jockey, and still is in Memphis, and still is a disc jockey. Well, he's got a TV show, and still one of my great friends. But he told us that Elvis was going to call me in exactly 2 hours. And it was exactly 2 hours. He's very punctual. And I asked George, is this something I've done? I knew he kept up with bands around the Memphis area. And Black Oak's only about 69 miles from the old Memphis Bridge. And he said, no, it's not something you've done. It's something you haven't done. And we'd already had our first album come out. It had Hot and Nasty on it. They say Jim Dandy is my name because my daddy gave me the nickname when I was 9 years old, and I hated it. Okay? Yeah, I thought he was saying I was some kind of sissy or something. I had more fights than Bill Hickok, okay? And especially when I was the only long hair in Arkansas. I had 5 fights a week behind the same barn every day after school. And it got to where I was pretty good at it, you know? But I was ugly all the time, but what did it matter? The girls weren't that pretty. You wore it around like medals. But it's just, you know, living back there in the rural, y'all got to know what it's like to be in a rural community, you know? And this was not Jonesboro or Paragould, okay? Those are the big towns, okay? Those are the big cities and big schools. But Black Oak, that was like an afterthought. That was like we were definitely collateral damage. And, but it's been a great adventure. And when we got to California, we were a very big surprise. We did fall off the shelf. We were like the wild card. We were like Joker's Wild, okay? There's no telling what we were going to do. And in a sense, we still have the excitement on stage because, like the Stones, when you know that Keith, Ron Wood, and Mick Jagger are on that stage, not to mention all the rest of them, I mean, they have a great lineup as far as their big show. And they've been doing the same thing since they're 17, now in their 70s.
Yeah.
They got to know what they're doing, right? And but to see them do it is... the young groups, and I know they have to have more than one group to survive because, you know, most of them are in 4 or 5 bands, you know, from in cities and stuff. Really good, talented young musicians, but it's really hard to make it in this business now today because of the tobacco and liquor laws, you know. And talking about the really young ones, you know, 13, 14, 15, besides gymnasiums to play in or whatever, but they are really, really talented. And music is to soothe the savage beast. Music is the answer. I mean, music is what... it's a common denominator for everybody is it is, if it's a medicinal antidote for the anxieties and animosities for civilization and civilized, humanity and humane, then we got to know how to play all kinds of songs and all kinds of medicine. You know, and if it helps, we got to at least do what we can to help. But we don't, you know, we're in the middle of, the kind of escalation is, you know, greed is never quenched, is never satisfied. And the escalation we have now, the markup we have on everything now, which at the same time where you're in a merciless recession, you know, it's like you can't, the people out there, whatever jobs their family's been doing all this time and passing down and knowing they're passing the knowledge, their supplies cost more than they ever did, and they get paid less than they ever have. They don't expect them to make do. They're just collateral damage. And, I mean, to think that people care is really feeling like a fool. you know, what are we going to do? Just laugh in the face of disaster, like Molly Hatchet says. It's a good song, though. Yeah. It's a good song.
Tell me just a little bit, if you would, Jim. Tell me a little bit about the experience of California Jam. And then we're going to talk a little bit about what's coming up. Because we can recreate that.
Know?
Well, I want to know about 4 minutes worth.
I mean,
within the legal limits.
I went out. Well, okay. Then I'll leave out the part about Linda Lovelace.
There
right?
you go. Leave her part out. Yeah, that's good.
She brought us on. He said, you ready to get hot and tasty? But besides that, I'm the kind of person that likes to be a participant and in on the ideas they're doing. And I went to the gig somehow separated from my band, wondering why. And I was on a helicopter the size that would hold a platoon, okay? And nobody on it but me and Linda Lovelace. Right? I'm going to have to tell you the rest of it, but I was not predictable.
Okay.
I'll just put it that way. I'd like to be a participant myself about things, and I'd like to be able to think of it myself. And really, it wasn't that attractive. But anyhow, it was a great experience. You couldn't see the last row. And when I was in New Orleans as a kid, they said you always try to play to the last row as well as front. And when we played, it's probably over 300,000 people. And also Black Sabbath, which made me really wonder why they fought so much with each other between Deep Purple and Emerson, Lake and Palmer on who closed this thing when it's 25 headliners playing, you know, and the crowd, it's like a festival. The ones that get there early are still there in the middle, and the ones that got there late are there. So you have everybody. But we played for the most people, and it was quite an experience. I mean, stage was 40 feet tall, this was 40 feet wide and thick. And the hardest part was walking down the railroad tracks on a video we did with a TV company. It had the cameras and stuff, the cameras that Ritchie Blackmore run into and broke, and it cost more than they were getting paid. They were getting paid what we were, about $65,000, you know. And it was, hit the camera cost $100,000.
Oh.
That's why he lost his gig. All right?
Oh, my.
That's why my good friend Tommy Boland got the gig. And you know, his brother, Johnny Boland, has been my drummer for 28 years. And Tommy was a great and wonderful, timeless legend. Very different for that time, day and age, on guitar and vocals. But Johnny's very talented also, and he's been with me about 28 years, I guess. And I loved his whole family. But Tommy did get the gig because of that, Tommy Boland. And it's funny to watch how people act when you got that many people out there, like, you know, the Woodstock thing. After people tore down the fence and everything, you know, it's got to be in such a big crowd. And all the people coming to this farm, they decided, well, just let everybody in, let's make it work and make sure nobody starves to death, nobody kills each other. And people were coming to play, you know, Crosby, Stills, and Nash had hardly done any gigs at all. And they came to do this gig and wrote a song about it, but they really, only a few people got paid to do that gig because they had contracts prior to when all this happened. It became a happening, you know. But California Jam was much more organized out there where there wasn't a shade tree, one. You know, I mean, there's a lot of heads out there getting hot with the sun, and you're out there at the Speedway, Ontario Speedway in California. And even though the airspace was connected to that, even though the airspace was against the law to be in that airspace with that body of people, we managed to pad somebody's billfold enough to where they came and let go of a whole bunch of cardboard sun visors.
okay, or sun
visors. It said Black Oak, Arkansas, and blue sun visors. And we still, to this day, see some of those sun visors.
That's amazing.
You know, I come up to the idea, I said, man, you've been out in the sun all this time. They don't have any shade, you know, any shade at all. And I guess good Lord managed to make it where we got away with it, you know, because in things like that, you got to go really high up to get that kind of favor done. But the guy was proud of it, and that was his story to tell for the rest of his life, to pilot, you know. And we managed to do that thing. Like, we saw how everybody was acting, but nobody was giving the TV station any credit or letting them get involved with their special videos or their pianists twirling or, you know, whatever it was they were doing. They were doing their own. I said, well, let's make them involved. Let them be a participant and do a stick on, you know, because me and Ruby and Jim Dandy, the rescue, to me, that was like Dudley Do Right and Little Nell, you know. And the rest of the guys all dressed up like Snidely Whiplashes and all that stuff. But to see the train tracks, they were moving both these stages on. They were 40 feet wide and high and long. And they moved them back and forth on these railroad tracks, but they didn't have any chat underneath the railroad ties. And I didn't know this when I told them I'd do this. But I carried Ruby in my arms, her dressed like Little Nell, and me with my high heel boots and my regular outfit, which to me almost wasn't fair, you know, with the high heel boots, which I used to spin on quite good. But they were kind of hard to walk on the railroad ties with a woman in your arms, no matter. But actually, Sammy's a little bit smaller than Ruby was. She's 5 foot tall. Ruby's more like 5'4", something like that. But I made it. That's my biggest accomplishment of that show, is making it down those railroad ties without dropping Ruby, hurting her or myself. And then they had me climb up the scaffolding for the stage. And here I am, you know. I've also gotten into, I've had, like when we did the record cover for Race for the Devil, these Arabian studs, these $150,000 horses, okay? I had to sign a release to get to ride them. And I was quite good as an equestrian, and I still love to ride. But I just slung on it with the saddle horn, you know, Western saddle, slung on it and came back. He's more silver gray than he was white, but then they wanted me to ride in parades and stuff because, you know, here I was in spandex, high heel boots, and a leather shirt, and I sling on to this horse, right? And he was worth a lot of money, but things like that are called on every now and then. You know, people expect things.
You would have made a good Roy Rogers or Gene Autry.
I was quite good with my guns and my bullwhip too. I could have rodeoed. Okay,
that's amazing.
Well, the holsters cost more than the guns did that I had, and they were a left-handed and a right-handed holster, which when I crossed them, it looked very bandito, right? And but I had a left-handed son at the time. My two older sons were left-handed, right-handed, and my third wife was left-handed. Yes, I had four. You never know, I may have five if I can ever talk her into it. But
now,
it's a.
Let me ask. So we go from California Jam, one of the most iconic rock festivals of the century, really. I mean, of the 70s, certainly. California Jam. Now, you're still doing it. You go to Sao Paulo, and you do 1.2 million down in Brazil, and we'll come back and talk about that. 1.2 million people watch you in Brazil. What about coming up later on this October? You're going to be literally in our backyard, and we're going to do one down here.
In his backyard, actually.
That's right. So in October, middle of October, on my birthday.
Really?
On my birthday, we're going to be doing a show in Carlisle, Illinois.
Brett's Winery.
And
Ricky's birthday is the 28th of October.
Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
So we've got the Brett's Winery show in Carlisle, and then, of course, Rotten Ween the next night, which we won't talk about a lot because it's a secret. But but let's talk about the Brett's Winery show. You've got some terrific local bands. Rod, your band, Riff Raff's going to play.
Along with Whole Lotta Lead.
Whole Lotta Lead, my gosh. So we got a Zeppelin, an AC/DC, and Black Oak, Arkansas. That would be a night to remember.
Yes.
And it will be.
It will be.
And the best thing is, it's not going to cost $90 for a ticket, is it?
I think Brett's is going to be charging $20 a pop, so that's pretty fair.
That's awfully fair. That sounds wonderful.
Well, people prices are really important. They really are. We just kind of brushed on it a while ago, but
I want you to talk about that.
You know, it's you got to remember that how much we oversaturated this business back in the 70s and 80s. Everybody that was anybody ever, you know, we're going out there and getting at least $2,000, $4,000, $5,000 from, you know, everybody. And at that time, you could do 300 days a year, and we did the first 3 years, okay, 70, 71, 72. And we did two albums a year, which you're competing against yourself most of the time. But we had a manager that thought it was going to, you know, go out of style any minute and didn't expect us to last no time. And we lasted 10 years. And actually, five of those years between 72 and 77, we were one of the top five moneymakers in the world. I mean, that's a hoot.
That
we had to work twice as much as the rest of them did. But to me, it wasn't working. I overworked my old band because I loved to do it so much. I mean, they should have never let me get away with it the first time, because this is a... something you can't quit doing, that's for damn sure.
Now, do you guys control it better now? I mean, right now at this point in your career, are you 100% in control? Do you tell your...
Control of what?
Well, of your shows, of your life, of cutting an album. Have you got to that point where you can say, if we want to play out, we're going to play out. If we want to go, we'll tell our manager to get us a few shows. What do you do?
If I'm in control, no one is.
Well,
that's all I got to say.
That's the best answer of the hour. Right there. Okay. But to a certain extent, you don't fall victim to, oh, you've got to do this.
No one else. I take all the blame, all right? That's all they left me. They took all the money. I got all the blame, but I don't share it with hardly anybody because it's mine. And with the blame comes the credit. You got to always remember that. And I can take the blame. I can live with that. I can live with me. I mean, I know me, and I can't resist being me whenever I see the world being stymied and where they can't. It's like I try to tell everybody, you have things that are, well, you're very enthusiastic. You have enthusiasms. You want to be enthusiastic about certain things, people out there, but they're afraid to. They're afraid to show their enthusiasm because when they do, they show their self and they're put down. And because this really is not a nation of freedom of speech or, you know, individualism, which it used to be. You don't have apprenticeship. You don't have things that are proven to be, in a common sense way, the truths that hold true and stay consistent in life. And now it's all paper, and it's all people you've never heard of, and it's all organizations, it's all corporations, and it's gone corporate, and they take us all for granted. And we're not the smartest in the world, and I mean, it's because they don't let us know things. It's getting to where it's very impersonal. You don't have a lot of things going on out there that's like very Americanized. But when our concerts happen, they may not be as big as they used to be, but we are. If anybody's in control, it's us. I am of our set, our song set, you know, that we do. I'm the one that picks out the songs and how we do them because I know my audience. And sort of like Grand Funk. When Mark Farner is with them, they may, when Donnie and Mel are by themselves, they may do the same songs, but they don't arrange them the way that Mark did. And Mark knew his audience better than they did. And I'm saying that's the way it is. Not nobody's fault. But when you go out there and you do all the interviews and you go to mingle with your people, and we did meet and greet before they called it meet and greet. I wanted to know our fans. And they're good people, but they're not really... They're more like the out-of-work people. They can't hardly afford CDs, much less go to concerts. And the prices they have on concerts, how many can they go to? How many can they afford to go to and take their spouse, take their wife, take their mate, have dinner or whatever? Man, you're running into, you know, a $300, $400 night. How many of those can you do in a year? It's a shame because, man, music, just like in the Depression, movies and music are very important. And
so
it's hard
to put a
finger
situation.
On it. And radio.
Yeah. Here's a situation on October 14th in Carlisle, another small town, down at Brett's Winery. You guys are going to be there along with Riff Raff and Whole Lot of Lead. You got a $20 ticket. You should have. How is this show going to go? Is it going to be an outside show?
It's going to depend on the weather. They have a really nice outside stage area there, and it's basically going to depend. If it's not raining and if it's nice out, but they also have like a 500-seater inside, so we're going to have a good evening no matter what the weather's like.
I would imagine that 500 is a small, very small number for what you expect.
We'll squeeze them in.
We'll squeeze about 1,500 to 2,000 in a 500-seat venue. I want to be there. I want to be part of that.
Didn't 300 Greeks kill about a million, you know?
Yes, they did.
I've never seen a movie about that. I didn't get to stay in school. They kicked me and Ricky out of every public school in the state of Arkansas. Did you know that?
Did they really?
It never happened before or since in the history of the state.
Did you guys really steal that
PA?
That's
a fact. That's a fact. I mean, you know, and as I got to thinking about it, I was thinking, that's kind of special, you know. But I would have never quit.
No.
No, I would have never quit. I mean, I had to go to field if I wasn't in school. And besides that, that's where everything was happening, you know. The contest or whatever.
Did you guys really steal your first PA from a high school?
Well, that's technically... it wasn't a. You mean a PA that we used?
Well,
it was broke when we stole it. My parents paid for it, and the new one they had replacing it. And I don't know.
Would you honor us with a song, Jim Dandy?
Sure, I'll honor you with a song. If it means anything to y'all, it means everything to me. I'm not the musician of the band, of course. Ricky, when he wrote that book, he dedicated it to me. Because he said my oldest and dearest friend in life, Mr. Jim Dandy, is going to have to be writing more songs now that I'm writing books. And so he dedicated a book to me. It's a great book called Evil Thingies. But I'm not sure that they're still as good as when he was helping me do it. Because he does still help me. He finds time to still help me. He's a gourmet chef, too. He can cook gravy to make you kill people. No, he's to die for. But we lived together a whole long time. In life, when you look back, me and him probably lived together with each other more than we did anybody else in our family or anything. And it's a test of tolerance when you think about he's a very patient person. He must be, because a little bit of me goes a long way. But I got really kind of big. You know, my old manager says, Jim, Tubalard Dandy, what do you call me? Jim, that's when I was getting big. I called myself Dumpy Dandy back then, but that he's gone, thank God, because I had to move out from Ricky. But I'm over there all the time anyway.
Our guest from Black Oak, Arkansas, Black Oak, Arkansas personified Jim Dandy, along with Rotten Rod. They're going to be performing later on October 14th at Brett's Winery down in Carlisle. You can get a ticket by calling 618-594-8830. I don't think it's going to be an easy ticket to get, so you might want to get it early. 618-594-8830 at Brett's Winery in Carlisle, Friday night, October 14th. That's at Brett's Wildlife Lodge and Winery in Carlisle. You know what? You don't run out, do you? You keep on writing because that's what you do. You keep on performing because that's what you do.
If I have an obsession, that's it. Because I'm just a conduit. Elvis put it the best way whenever he talked to me on the phone. First thing I said that embarrassed me, he told me to do this song called Jim Dandy, The Rescue, turn it first person. And because I was meant, it was really almost too heavy. I was thinking, please don't, you know, it's your destiny, he's telling me, to do this song. And I'm thinking, no, please don't get heavy with this. I'll do it, what you want me to do. Whatever, you know, King of Rock and Roll is asking you to do something, you're going to do it. And he says, have you heard it? And I said, no, not really, because I didn't even know about the song. My daddy started calling me Jim Dandy when I was 9 years old, and I hated it. And he says, well, you know, the coolest thing was I said, well, you don't say no to the King of Rock and Roll. And he says, oh, there ain't but one king, but I ain't him. He's talking about Jesus. Couldn't wait to tell my mama that. And he says, it comes through us, not from us, Jim Dandy. We just got the best seat in the house. I thought that was so noble. That was so cool. And he told me, he says, well, you got to listen to it, and you got to sing it as, you know, I was sitting on the mountaintop and all this stuff. And we did it. And it's when you meet all these people, and you learn what you can do. I was kind of like always, I listened to my parents. I had great parents. My dad was always telling me things, but I was always a man of few words. He used to tell me when I was riding next to him in a pickup truck, and back then at 6 or 7, I could stand there next to him, you know. I didn't have to have a car seat, and it's a shame. I don't think any more of us got killed back then without car seats than they do with them now. And our seat belts either, if you ask me, if you want to know the truth, I never see a record driver with a seatbelt on. But it's like, he'd say things like, son, can't never could do nothing, and can always will. Are you a can man or a can't man? I said, I'm a can man, Dad. You know, he shaped me into what I am, and I believed that I could do anything I wanted to do if I wanted to bad enough and if I deserved it. And which, there's only two kinds of people in the world, those with a conscience and those without.
Mm. Good, and, good, good.
Those
advice.
Without think they got the edge.
Yeah.
They do, but they don't. They don't.
So, shows continue to go on, including, of course, our show coming up Friday, October 14th, down at Brett's. You've been hanging out with Rod because you were in Detroit, and then you're playing in Chicago this weekend. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, St. Charles, and we're looking forward to it. It should be a good show, but we're really looking forward to these in October. And, you know, we're playing with Leonard Skinner on the 8th of July in Kansas City. We're playing with Molly Hatchet in St. Louis sometime, about a month after we play here. But, you know, it should be a good time. We're having a great time.
You're fixing to go to New York here in a week or two, ain't you, Jim?
Yeah, we're playing Bowery Electric and doing a festival that we do outside of New York in Middleton, New York. It's going to be a great time because, I mean, Bowery Electric is a small club, but last time we were there, it was its namesake. I mean, it was very electric. It was we were like the Beatles or something, you know. And it's really fun when that happens. But I feel unworthy. I mean, I met John Lennon. He put his hand on my shoulder, said, "Can we go talk?" It made me nauseous when he told me that I was ahead of my time. But he wasn't talking about our music. He was talking about me talking to the audience, or not to the audience, but for the audience. I more or less said what they was afraid to say. Ricky always said we was going to get in trouble for that. But it felt too good to do, not to do, you know.
If you love your audience, and it's always been obvious that you do, and you've always appreciated.
How could I not?
They always appreciated the talent and appreciated the good fortune that you've been given.
Because of them, they made it possible. I mean, we're self-employed, but except for the fact that our fans are who we work for. And what they want and to please them is everything. That's the whole ball of wax.
We got 2 minutes, and I wish we had two more hours. I truly do. But in a minute and a half to 2 minutes, can you just tell me what is your whole philosophy, a 90-second philosophy from Jim Dandy? Because you've been talking about everything so awesome all the way through.
Well, I don't know what to say except you can't make anybody happy if you're not happy yourself. And in situations in the world today, God can't be on everybody's side. Everything ends in violence, and it all ends up being religious wars and spiritual wars and innocence being killed everywhere because of people's beliefs. And we need to learn how to get along, which don't seem like we'll ever be able to get along. Can't we all just get along? It don't seem like it. There's so much variety in the kind of people you got out there. And we need more people with a conscience, and we need more people to care. And I don't know about philosophy, you know, back porch philosophy.
Okay.
I don't know what to tell you except that we can all help each other help ourselves to whatever we want, as long as we deserve it, as long as we want it bad enough.
Chubby Checker always said one of them would just make the whole world happy. We'd like to make the whole world better. You know, that's true, too.
If we were all happy, it would be better.
Yes, that's for sure. Jim Dandy, our guest. Yes.
Hey, can I do a quick plug here?
You bet.
Riff Raff and Whole Lot of Lead will be up at Hillsboro Saturday night at the Courthouse Pub for Danny Klotfelder's Klotfest.
That's right. Okay, that's good, too. That's coming up all right on the square.
Yes.
Back behind the Courthouse Pub.
Yeah.
All right, thank you so much. Our guest, Jim Dandy, Black Oak, Arkansas.
See that picture on that thing he's got there, the picture of the band picture?
Oh, yeah, it's a gorgeous picture.
That's her right there in the middle.
That's so fine.
Yeah.
She is so awesome. Thank you for being our guest. Back, Terry's going to wrap it up here before 4. And don't forget, 14th, a Friday, October 14th at Brett's Winery in Carlisle.